You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So often, it's always enlightening, and I say that so often I look for stories, topics, individuals who bring some heartwarming stories to the public eye. And this week's edition is certainly not lacking in that department. In fact, my guest is a local author, David Dickman. His new book is A Special Gift of Chocolate. And David's inspiration, first of all, the book is about a Labrador puppy who goes to school to learn to become a seeing eye dog. I have witnessed this firsthand. Many of you, especially if you're pet lovers, have witnessed this as well. And David was inspired by a trip he had taken right here in Central Mass to the NEEDS organization, where they train and they place seeing eye dogs with people with disabilities, which David is also a part of. So, kudos to him for, one, not only having to deal with, physical issues, but being able to put all of this story between the pages of the book. And it is really an enlightening book. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with David Dickman. David, nice to have you with us.
Thank you all. It's nice to be on your program.
This is, again, I'm familiar with NEEDS, but just to let people know, what exactly do they do, and how is that an inspiration for the book?
Okay, yeah, and that's an important question to bring up, because with dogs, special dogs trained, there are different categories of them. So NEEDS, for example, they train what are called service dogs. And so those dogs are typically trained to help a disabled person turn on a light or open a door or pick up something off the floor, those types of things. And they're very clear and very adamant about that. They don't want to be compared to seeing eye dogs or other types of dogs, because they have their own distinct niche. So back 30 years ago, I did a feature story on NEEDS for the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. And it was an amazing thing to watch. The dogs are beautiful. They're very... I find it, frankly, very emotional, because these dogs are trained to give unconditional love and help to someone who needs it very badly. So I was moved by that, and at the same time, I felt, gee, someday I'd love to write a children's story on this very subject. And so over time, I began to build up various things that you need, like a social media footprint, which if more folks want to learn about me and what I'm about, they can go to YouTube, and they can go to a channel called SBSK, which is Special Books for Special Kids. And Chris Ulmer, who is the manager of that station, he interviews people with disabilities from all over the world and gives them a platform to tell their story. So, as I say, folks can check that out if they like. It's a very nice interview, very well put together by Chris. It's about a little over 12 minutes long, so not in a lot of time, but It's information packed for sure.
Yeah, David, the book, when you first emailed me with the idea of having you on, and I saw this, I said, A Special Gift of Chocolate, and the story about a Labrador, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is strictly a children's book, but it's really not, is it?
No, it's actually, and I'm glad you brought that out, Alan. It's very true. We want it to be very educational. And yes, it's a children's picture book per se, but it's extremely educational for adults as well as children, because we talk about some of the finer nuances with that whole breed of dog that gets trained for these folks. And they go through very extensive training. The Labradors and typically Labs and Shepherds, German Shepherds, get chosen for this task. But they go through months of training, sometimes years. And then they have to go through training again with their paired-up owner so they can all function as one unit, so to speak. So the Labs and the Shepherds, they're trained to work in all kinds of conditions. They're trained, for example, not to be afraid of noises or stuff that may frighten another dog, or a thunderstorm, for example. So they're also trained to be, obviously, a dog guide or CNI dog to help the blind person. So they have to not only figure out what they're doing themselves as an animal, but this person that they've got holding their harness and leading them safely from point A to point B. It's really remarkable. These dogs have to possess very high intelligence and very good memories, believe it or
yeah.
not.
Yeah, and you right on there, David, because I have been in hospital environments. I've been in supermarkets. I mean, it doesn't really matter. Doctor's office, you name it. Mm-hmm. And you can inevitably find an individual, and you'll see these dogs. Sometimes they're wearing like a cloak, if you will, and it says yep. right on it. It says service dog.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, if it weren't for that animal, if it weren't for that service dog, how much more difficult would that individual's life be? I mean, it's not like you can have somebody 24/7 by your side.
Right.
You just can't.
Exactly.
So these animals are so they mean so much to so many people, but especially as you were talking about. People with the special needs. Some in many cases, they're either their eyes, their ears, protecting them.
Yep.
Most remarkable thing, and I'm sure you've seen this too. I was at a crosswalk back a few years ago, and I believe it was right here on Main Street in downtown Worcester, and somebody was walking, you know, with a service dog.
Yeah.
That individual was blind, and I'm thinking, God. What a tremendous effort. This animal is a miracle because
yeah,
how
yeah.
else would that person have been able to cross that street? You know, even for those who can see, you really have to watch both ways and be
yep.
very careful. So they really serve a big purpose. But let me go back a little bit to your background now. I mean, you know, for many, many years, you wore many hats. You've done many things.
Yeah.
Was writing always something that was, you know, at the root, something that was always a passion for you?
Yes, it was, Al. In fact, I loved writing all through my years of high school and college. And, you know, I had developed good writing skills and good communication skills. So that has always been, as you would well put it, the root of my professional life. It helped me land other jobs. I mean, the fact that I could write well led me to many doors that opened up in terms of banking, in terms of manufacturing. As you say, I've done a lot of things, and I really have, and I'm grateful for that, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, I remember going to grammar school, and then, you know, back 100 years ago in the Catholic grammar school, and the nuns would say, if you can't read and if you can't write, you can't succeed. And you know what? In spite
exactly.
of technology, David, I think that still holds true today.
It sure does. In fact, one of my English teachers, and I don't know if she's alive or not. I would like to think she still is. Her last name was Smith, Mrs. Smith. Nancy was her first name, I believe. She gave me the best advice you could ever give anyone that wants to learn how to write and write well. And she'd say to me, now this is in junior high, mind you. She says, David, when you write something, read it out loud to yourself.
Mm.
And she says, if it clunks, you're going to hear it. And you'll know how to correct it, to be grammatically correct and flow nicely. Some of the best advice Al was ever given. I to this day thank her for that.
I think she's right. Anything that you write, even if it's a personal note to another individual, no matter how well you know them,
yeah.
Read it back to yourself, and you know, if it doesn't flow properly,
you're gonna pick up on it.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And I'm sure you were going from one chapter to the other. In the special gift of chocolate, you probably did that 100 times.
Yes.
Rehashing it, reworking
yep.
it.
I
think people, like any craftsperson, writing is indeed a craft first and foremost, right?
Yeah, it's a wonderful medium to work in. That's the thing I tell folks all the time.
Yeah.
Writing is wonderful. Our language, the English language, is so rich and so textured. It's just fun working with words.
Yep.
Some of the best writers I've ever read, for example, Truman Capote. And William Rehnquist, of all people, if you can think of it, these people wrote, and their stuff was like pure butter. It was just beautiful to read and absorb. Truman Capote had a wonderful gift for writing.
Oh, yeah. I think anybody, it is a gift. I don't think you could just wake up on a Monday morning and decide to be an author.
Yeah, sure enough.
Let me ask you, I find it very troubling that bookstores across the globe, let alone here in this country, closing. People don't read books the way they used to. Everything comes off of the internet. You know,
yep.
everybody's got a phone in their hand, and that's all well and good. I guess what I'm trying to say is, it would have been very easy for you to say, "Well, you know what? Bookstores are closing. Nobody's reading anymore. Why am I bothering?" But the book has actually been doing quite well, right?
It has. It's been on my seller's ranking with Barnes & Noble. As I said, it's ticking favorably. It's trending the right way. In other words, not that I may be a number one writer, but it's trending in that direction to be a a good writer for the first time out, for sure, as a debut book.
Yeah, see, I find that encouraging. I find that amazing that, you know...
Not too long ago in the news, I saw that they were saying book clubs are starting to make a comeback.
I hope so.
The popularity of them is starting to grow again.
David, you just said it yourself, and I do the same thing. I mean, I'm a history buff, so I've always got something, a biography or something, some history book by my side. Even if it's a chapter a day, even if it's a few pages, I just feel that I've gained a little bit more in the way of knowledge and your one's ability to read.
Yes, right.
So that makes an importance, too. Some people would say, an author from Central Mass? Can't be true. I mean, what I'm trying to say is, were there a lot of people that would, instead of encouraging you, rather not give you that, confidence that you would need? You're not in New York City, you're not in L.A., you have to be part of the literary society.
Right.
You're not. You came from Central Mass. Who cares?
Right.
In fact, I think it's great that somebody local has written a book. But, you know, were there many naysayers?
There were a few, for sure, and you're absolutely right. Unless you come from the right background or you do the right things, live in the right areas, they kind of poo-poo you a little bit. But I have to say as well, though, over the years that I've done a lot of writing, a lot of my close friends have become my fans, so to speak, because they've read many things I've written in the past, some published, some unpublished. So they've always known, my friends have always known that, you know, someday I'd love to land a book in the bookstore shelves for the real deal to get really published. So my friends have been elated since this has come on the scene. So they're very good, but it is a tough field. I would say to folks, don't be daunted by when you hear those comments. For example, one of the things I was told early on, Al, you've got to get an agent. If you don't have an agent, your manuscript will go nowhere because agents can get you in where maybe a manuscript couldn't ordinarily go. And while that may be true, I would simply say to folks out there, agents aren't the be-all, end-all, because you're going to find them when you try to look for an agent. They're like a lot of publishers that say, we're not looking for that. Even agents will tell you they don't want unsolicited material.
Right.
So it's like, what's that all about?
Yeah. That's absolutely true, because a couple of years ago, former Boston newscaster Natalie Jacobson had written a book, and I had the opportunity to interview her. And as much as she loved writing the book, in the crossing the finish line, if you will, with a completed book, she did say, she... well known 30-40 years in Boston media, New England media, well known, certainly you would think that a publisher, but she had to self-publish. So
that's unfortunate. I feel so bad when people end up saying that, because, it's a real nice thing to be able to get published, and it's really nice if you actually have a publisher that says, yes, we like your material, we're going to publish it,
right.
And by the way, you don't have to pay for the cost of it. Some people want to be published so desperately, so badly, they're willing to pay for it. And that's really unfortunate. I have had the luxury with this particular debut book of working with what they call a traditional contract. So my publisher has paid for, the cost of printing it, lending an illustrator to illustrate it, you name it. And,
wow.
and by the way, I have to say, I want to give kudos to Andrew Jackman, my publisher, because they put out a very pretty book, a very well put together design book in and of itself, let alone the story that may be containing.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen if listeners go to Amazon, Barnes and Noble, walk into your bookstore, more importantly, but even online, you can see that, the illustration was very nice, very appealing, and I think that's very important to it, too, David. I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is local author, and I emphasize local right here in Worcester County, David Dickman. His new book is The Special Gift of Chocolate, and it's his first book. Writing is not new to David, but he didn't come into this world as a noted author. He really worked in many different capacities and ended up with, and David, it's got to be, I did some writing for the local paper myself, and it's very elating when you look at your work and you think, wow, somebody saw value in that. Somebody felt that this was worth putting between the pages. In this case, a whole book.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of books that are written out there that are, like I said at the outset, some people would look at it and say, oh, that's a children's book. It could be. It certainly could be. It's very heartwarming. It's something you'd want a child to read. But adults.
And again, my editor, and I give him a tip of the hat to him, he's the one that said to me, Dave, go and talk to several agencies that deal with folks that are blind.
Yeah.
And find out what it is we need to have in our book that makes it correct and educational. And that was some of the great advice I've ever gotten.
Oh, without a doubt.
I talked to the Mass Commission of the Blind, for example. I talked to the Seeing Eye, which is a dog guide training program, the oldest one in the country, in Morristown, New Jersey. And they've been around for 100 years. And, they were wonderful to talk to. I talked to the Perkins School for the Blind.
Mm, yeah.
Getting information from these folks. Things like, for example, holding the dog harness. Which hand is it held in? It's held in the left hand.
Mm.
Even some little bit of inside baseball stuff. For example, you'll see some folks that are blind using what they call the white cane. And the white cane they will use, typically, when they're in a new area, they're not sure where they're at and what they're doing, so they will use that cane to help them find their way through the situation that they're currently in.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so my children's story, in Chocolate, you see, for example, Chocolate being introduced to her new owner, Peter. And in the picture of him, the instructor showing her the picture of Peter with his white cane. And so then in the next scene, when finally Chocolate is paired up with Peter, they're there downtown, wherever it might be, we'll say this time Worcester, and Peter said, with the dog, harness in left hand and white cane in right hand.
Mm.
And so, one of the fun things of putting a story together was with working with my illustrator. She helped me tell the story as much as I did, frankly. And so we decided consciously that was going to be the last scene with Peter with his white cane. He was no longer going to have it.
Right.
And so it's very nuanced because what that is saying is once a dog owner becomes comfortable with their dog guide, they tend to shed the white cane. They're so comfortable with their animal helping them that they don't need a cane anymore, so they feel.
Yeah.
So my story deliberately shows Peter without his white cane. And not to ruin the story, but I won't ruin it, but it does end with Peter dreaming of making travel to, Europe, France, Paris, wherever.
Well, I would imagine, David, and you because you did so much, that kind of legwork, the research before, writing the book, while writing the book, is the fact that the bond between the animal and the owner becomes such that it's like your best friend. So you have
it's
such
immense.
Yeah, and you have such trust and confidence in the animal that you don't need. Be honest with you. Is a cane going to really lead you in the right?
Exactly. No, you're certainly better off with a living, thinking.
Yeah,
assisting you and guiding you.
As I said, you've seen it 100 times. We've all seen these service dogs, and the work that they do, and what they do for people's lives. People who would probably not veer out from their home or from the safety zone.
Yep.
Now have the opportunity to enrich their lives.
Yep.
The things that we all take for granted.
Frankly, Al, you're correct. It's a life-changing event for us.
Absolutely. And that's why the special gift of Chocolate, and by the way, and I think you alluded to it, David, but I just want to clarify this. Chocolate is the dog, right?
That's right.
Yeah. How many times do people say, oh, I got a dog. Well, what do you have? I have a chocolate lab.
Yeah. So Chocolate is, in this case, the lab's name, and she's a female dog.
Yeah.
And she grows up with a bunch of siblings, as the story goes, and she's having fun playing with them all the time. And this story, I like to think, stresses several important themes for children as well as adults. That it's important to go to school. For example, her mom tells her, you've got to go to school, and she can't understand, why, Mom? Why am I going? And the mother's trying to tell her that you've got some special gifts that you can bring to people and help them. And so schooling is a theme that's important, we say. And then other things like, the dog changing this person's life. But when you help someone, whether you're an animal or a human being, it's just a wonderful thing to be able to do, to help someone literally transform their life and have a more fulfilling and full life.
We get that one has those themes in it. Yeah. We get that one chance, David, on this earth, and good, bad, or otherwise, you want to live it and live a fulfilling life as much as possible.
Yep.
Some people are not as fortunate. They come into this world, as we've been talking about, with disabilities. You know this firsthand. The sacrifices that you have to make, the extra effort to be able to get around and to live what some would say is the normal life. So these dogs and these animals they're so devoted to their owner.
I jokingly call them like the Lipizzans of dogs.
Mm, absolutely,
they will not abandon their owner for nothing.
Exactly, and that's what I found so heartwarming about the story is the fact that man's best friend, yes, indeed, man and woman's best friend, I should say. As we start to wind down, let me ask you: the book is doing well. That's obviously must make you feel so good.
It does.
Has this been inspiring to get you back to writing something?
Absolutely. I'm talking about yes.
I knew it.
A publisher that I'm with, he has right in the pipeline now two other manuscripts that I've done, and we're going to let this one play out and let it do its thing. And then go back and visit the other ones. Both of them are children's stories again, picture book stories.
Yep.
But one of them is of one I feel very strongly about, and it's called Dabla Loves Mabla. And it's a story about me taking care of my mom the last 6 years of her life with Alzheimer's.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I feel very strongly about, and we'd love to see it come out.
Yeah, I think
hopefully in the next year or so.
Well, I hope so, because I think that the disease itself is so debilitating. I've had family members die from that, and so many people. If you don't have a family member or friend, you know somebody.
Yep, you sure do.
It's
very widespread, and I think it's a critical topic to educate people about.
Absolutely, and also give them confidence, give them hope. Just to fill a void in many people's lives. And that's exactly what the special gift of chocolate, like I said, you may not be a disabled person, but after reading this story, you have a profoundly different viewpoint. And more empathy and more understanding, not just for the person, but for the animal and how they interact with each other. And I could go on forever because I really enjoyed reading it. David, real quickly now, if people want to get more information about, first and foremost, the special gift of chocolate, it's widely available in bookstores, online.
You can buy it online.
Yep.
You can get it at Walmart. You can get it, believe it or not, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, even the local bookstore here in Worcester, the Tidepool Bookshop.
Oh, okay.
On Chandler Street. They have the book. They can get it for you. So you can go to a bookstore, or you can do it online, and the book is purchased. It's out in both softcover and hardcover. The softcover retails for $9.99, and the hardcover retails for $24.99.
Great.
I hope folks do buy it. I hope they love it, most of all, because it's a great story, and it's based on a true story that I had written 30 years earlier.
Yeah, and as I said at the outset, David is himself, a special needs person, and this was really a yeoman's effort. And kudos to you for pulling this all off. So many people would shy away from a challenge like this,
and you
decided to hang in there, and well worth it. The book,
life is good.
Yeah,
and life is what you make of it.
Yeah, absolutely,
folks. Don't be daunted.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Again, the book is The Special Gift of Chocolate. My guest has been the author, David Dickman, right here in Central Mass. So another reason to wave the flag of Central Mass and the great people that live right here in the central heart of New England. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can email me directly with any comments, questions, or feedback. I certainly welcome that. Keep it clean. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.